Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Staffing Referrals. At Staffing Referrals, we understand the challenges your agency faces every day, from finding high-quality candidates and clients to automating your recruitment process. Our platform is designed to help you grow your agency faster. Imagine a world where your agency can automatically build your talent community, improve your recruiter's productivity, and automate manual processes, all the while improving the candidate experience. But don't just take our word for it. Here's what a few satisfied customers have to say. Our referral program boomed after partnering with Staffing Referrals. The technology allows us the tracking, communication, and reporting our traditional referral program desperately needed to unify and expand. Can't imagine our business without it. Are you ready to transform your staffing agency? Let's reduce your dependency on job boards. Deliver the experience your candidates expect from a modern business and turn your talent pool into a competitive advantage. Visit staffingreferrals.com and get ready to grow.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Casey Jacox, who is the author of Win the Relationship, Not the Deal, and the host of the Quarterback Dad Cast. And he is also a sales and leadership performance coach with an incredible tenure in the staffing industry. Casey, super excited to have you here today and to talk about who you are, what you've done, what you're doing. To kick things off and give a little bit of context to the audience, could you tell us how you got into the staffing industry?
Well, Dave, first, I'm grateful to be here, excited to be on. Well, like most people in staffing, I dreamt about as a kid. You know, next to Amarino, I had
all of us.
Yeah, all CEO of K-Force and Insight Global and Slalom and Accenture. I just dreamt one day I'm going to get into staffing.
You're like astronaut or K-Force? I don't know.
I don't want to go to the moon. I want to go work for K-Force. Why wouldn't I? No, joking aside, like most of us, we fall into it. Former college quarterback, that's an Uncle Rico moment right there, everybody. I could throw the ball up the mountain if you want me to. But college athlete, got into a sales job called Barcodes West. They were a labeling software company. I called them stickers.
Yep.
And my boss was like, they're labels. I'm like, but they're kind of also stickers.
They're stickers.
And so I kind of showed my maturity quickly. And it was one of those sales jobs where you pound the phone, but yet no one could explain the commission structure. And I remember when I left, and then my good buddy, Kelly Hansen, who's still at K-Force doing great things, he convinced me to take this interview at a company called Hall Kenyon, which was K-Force purchased in June of 2004. And I didn't even understand. I was like, staffing, what, contractors and the pay rate? And it just didn't make sense. And all of a sudden, so I interviewed 9 times at Hall Kenyon with the likes of talented Lisa Crawford, the talented Angela Ronica, with my first former leaders. And Lisa gave me a chance. And it was so silly of me to do, David, but it was so, I guess it shows my naivety. I took an hourly contract sales job to become like kind of a sourcer, biz dev guy at Hall Kenyon. And I left a full-time job.
Commission only?
No, it was like an hourly. It was like $16 an hour. And I thought, I was like, oh my God, I'm making so much money. This is amazing.
Yeah.
But she bet on me and I bet on myself that I was like, but I mean, I could have said the wrong thing and got canned on accident, whatever. But yeah, I fell in love with the staffing industry. I had some great leaders. You know, I think guys like Jeffrey Neal was a huge mentor of mine. And then K-Force purchased us June of 2004, 20 years later, there I was and met some amazing people, had some amazing clients and learned so much. And I think that's why, I guess, really inspired me to write the book on relationship building, because I think so many companies tell their sales team to build relationships. They just don't slow down to teach them. And so that was my goal.
That's amazing. And set you up for a little bit of bragging, but I know that you and I talked recently and you were sharing some of your achievements at K-Force. Do you mind digging into that a little bit?
So I always say right guy, right time, right place. I had a fantastic recruiting team, fantastic client, but I was our number one rep 10 straight years and professionally left us one of the firm's all-time leading seller in the history of the company. And I always say, who cares? Now I'm very proud of that, but I know that when you dial 911, my phone doesn't ring. And so I'm inspired by people who are humble. I work on humility every single day. But yeah, I'm definitely proud of what I achieved. But have you heard about the book called The Second Mountain?
No.
So one of my buddies turned clients, he's a chief strategy officer at a company called Brighton Jones. He had me read a book called The Second Mountain, which is about like in life, you climb a mountain and you come back down. So K-Force, I kind of look, was my first mountain.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize. And then as I came down, I kind of went through this, you know, right around 45 years old, like, well, what's next? I didn't know. So I feel like I'm kind of on the second mount where, you know, the same skills I used in football, the same skills I use in relationship building and nonprofits in that K-Force now as a leadership coach. It's like same things, they still work. But yeah, grateful for the time at K-Force, and definitely was a nice run we had together as a team.
Oh, that's incredible. And I think one of the reasons I was excited to talk with you today is I know our industry, the staffing industry right now, everybody's trying to figure out sales. People are trying to figure out what's the strategy, what are the tactics, how can we approach it, how can we improve our process around it. Would love for you to dig a little bit into lessons that you've learned over the years at K-Force. And then I also want to talk about your book and kind of dig into that as well.
Shoot, that'll be a 7-hour episode of things I've learned. But I think the things I'm continuing to see in the industry right now are a lack of focus, a lack of understanding who is your ideal customer, your ICP. I see a lack of people using a sales process. I see a lack of curiosity inside sales teams. And when curiosity and humility and vulnerability don't exist, you have this little four word, a nasty F word called fear. And when fear likes to hide itself inside of sales teams, that means ego is going to be big, which are recipes for disaster. I think a lot of the best practices I learned that either I was unconsciously competent or consciously competently taught, I didn't realize how uncommon they were in it. But as I teach people these skills around sending a meeting follow-up, having a call to action, documenting in your CRM, asking a follow-up question. Don't ask two or three questions inside of one question. Create space after you ask a question and shut the F up. Just because you feel like you have to talk salespeople, you don't. The best sellers in my experience are curious storytellers. They believe what they do matters, hence the sign behind me. So one of the pieces of advice that I got taught that I shared for days at K-Force that probably my friends and got tired of me saying, and I share it now in my journey as a leadership coach, is a leader asked me, he said, what's more important? Do you want to be right or do you want to get what you want? And at my 23-year-old self, I said, I want both. He goes, you can't. You got to pick one. I'm like, shoot, okay, well, I want to get what I want. He's like, good answer. Because if you'd have told me you want to be right, that means you have a massive ego. And this is not going to be a place where I'm going to have you work. And I was like, you know, it's like blue pill or red pill. Good thing I guess the right one. But to me, it's like, it's never, if you're always someone that wants to be right, you're going to find yourself in constant turmoil. And I think about that piece of advice really resonated with me in staffing, because if I had to convince a hiring manager that this is the perfect candidate, yet I don't have a software degree, I don't know how to code, I don't know how to write business functional requirements, I don't know how to wireframe as an IA, I don't know how to do engineering, who am I to say what's a perfect candidate? But if I ask great questions and understand what he or she might be looking for, then the client will close himself. That's what selling is. And so it just focused on me as like getting what I want, which is more consultants working, more deals close, more friends that have a good experience with me, more recruiters that, man, that guy, Casey, he makes my life easy. He's got his requirements are tight. He really has tight process, gets the client always to follow up with us, which are, it's easier said than done. It takes time and effort, you know, build those things. But I think that'd be the one piece of advice, hopefully, I want people to take away from our conversation today is really ask yourself, do you want to be right or do you want to get what you want? And as a 49-year-old, I use that advice often still, probably why I've been married for 26 years.
I love that. And I also have a personal story to that, which was couples therapy years ago.
Okay.
A therapist literally asked in couples therapy, do you want to be right or in the relationship? And I'll never forget that moment. And I was single like a month later, but it wasn't. And for good reason, but I'm married now and happily married, but it was, I think about that often and I haven't thought about it in terms of the business context. So it's amazing. And you and I recently, when we were talking before this podcast, you brought up that you have a kind of an interesting leadership equation. Can you tell me a little bit about that and the background and what that is?
I've touched on it a little bit so far, but the math equation, which I wasn't the best math student, but I created an algebra equation for leadership, which is H plus C plus V equals L, which is humility plus vulnerability plus humility equals leadership. So H, yeah, humility, C, V, humility, curiosity, vulnerability equals leadership. There we go. And the reason why I believe that is because I've experienced it in sports, in nonprofits, in my professional journey. When I was around leaders who were always humble enough to thank the team first versus all about them, they were vulnerable enough to say what they don't know or where they used to suck. And they were curious to ask us as a team a lot more questions. They encouraged people to ask questions. They encouraged people to ask for help. And when any of those skills are lacking, as I mentioned earlier, then fear likes to hide. And if you're a sales leader or recruiting leader and listening right now, and you find yourself in your 30 to 45 to 60 minute sales meeting or recruiting meeting, ask yourself, are you talking more or is your team talking more? And if you're talking more, I'd be willing to bet there's probably some fear. How often do you practice? Practice like for a meeting, practice for a recruiting conversation, or do people like shut down and say, oh, I don't want to practice that? If they say they don't want to practice, which means they want to wing it and they want to practice on their candidates, so they want to practice on their clients. And if we told them that, they probably wouldn't be too happy. So I'm convinced those skills are superpowers. I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm just saying for me, my experience on Earth for 49 years, that they're the best skills I've seen any leader possess. I'm sure there's other ones out there, but for me, those are my top three.
Yeah, well, I feel like if you take any one of them out, you have immediate gaps. So I feel like it makes sense to me, and it feels like it aligns with what good leadership looks like. What are some of the other, you know, when it comes to building the skill set for the humility, vulnerability, curiosity, any specific approaches to that?
Yeah, so one of the things around curiosity I got taught late in my career that I absolutely love, and I love sharing with the world now because I was taught, I think that's what the best ideas are meant to be shared. And so I teach a framework now called TED, which stands for Tell Me, Explain, Describe. It's a way that I like to ask questions when I'm going on meetings. And I learned this at age 41, which is a huge year of growth for me on many levels. And when I coach people, I'm like, anybody who's listened to this that's worked with me knows that, yeah, he's a freaking psycho with TED-based language. He's always on my ass. He won't let me off the hook. I'm like, that's the same thing this guy who did taught me. It was shout out to John Kaplan if you're listening. And I just think TED-based language, it just allows for really open-ended ways for the conversation to go anywhere. And I remove modifiers before my TED-based questions. And what I mean by that is, if I said, hey, can you tell me more about you? You could say no, because it's really a closed-ended question. But if I said, hey, tell me two things that made you want to start this podcast, totally different way of asking it. And by me putting a number in the question, now that you as the human's like, well, he asked for two reasons, so I got to give it to him, because you can't say yes or no. Or if you go to a meeting, this is one of my favorite questions I like to teach, and I'll give it away for free today, is if I was starting a meeting with you, David, instead of me assuming my agenda is the right agenda or what you want to talk about, I'm going to say, hey, thank you for your time today. You know, I know we spoke a couple of days ago. I prepared an agenda based on our conversation, but more importantly, describe what would be an ideal outcome for you in the 45 minutes we have today. And when I ask the question that way, I get the answers to the test. And it takes away the guessing. Just like you and I joke, like it's like, you know, people in software, well, I got to give the demo.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. Just like, well, I have an agenda and I have to talk exactly about what I'm supposed to talk about. But what if your client doesn't want to talk about that? What if something's changed? What if they don't want to see the demo? It's like, just like before you, we share these things, again, another way of curiosity. It's like, before I want to tell a story or convince or tell someone I can help them, I ask a question. Ted, tell me, would it be helpful if I shared a story around X, Mr. and Mrs. Client? Now they're ready to listen versus me just assuming that they want to hear these things, which again, I think it really takes a skill set and mindset of slowing down, being present in the moment, which is hard to do in this fast-paced world.
Yeah, I think that's great advice and also nuanced. And I mean, I think about my own experience in sales calls and conversations, asking people like, oh, well, what do you want to cover today? No, we're good. Like the way that you ask it changes the outcome pretty significantly. And I think making sure that you're doing it in a way that actually encourages people to participate and give an answer is one of the more challenging things when you're trying to ask questions. I find myself always going to yes, no's, just nonstop dead ends. So
takes practice.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me a year to get really good at TED, and now I've been teaching it and practicing it since almost 10 years now. And so it's always top of mind for me. And I think the best people I practiced on were my kids. If there's parents listening, TED-based language is, you want to get your kids to talk? Because most parents, when their kids come home from school, it'd be like, hey, Ryder, how was school? Good. Yeah. What'd you do? Nothing. Did you have fun? Yep. All right, dude, we'll go play Xbox for 6 hours and we'll see you later. Like, dad of the year versus, hey, Ryder, tell me about school today. It sucked. Great. Tell me why it sucked. Well, because we had to go to school. Well, tell me, what would you do differently if you didn't have to go to school? Well, I'd maybe go golfing. Great. Tell me why. So I think, like, I mean, I'm being sarcastic and joking here, but like when people practice what I call TED-based language, TED-based questions, but where they miss it, or just like anybody's, you don't have to even use TED, you can use your own framework, but where most sellers miss is the second and third level. What I mean by that is, so if I ask a question, and you say, well, let's say, for example, staffing. Hey, describe what would be an ideal outcome. And you say, I'd like to learn more about your contract to hire terms and your prompt engineering experience. I'd say, so the common approach is the seller might just go in and, oh, okay, well, we can do contract hire. We can help you. Versus, great, tell me why that would be impactful for you today. Well, because we recently had a situation or competitor that, or one of your competitors who was not flexible. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Yeah, we wanted to convert after 2 months and they wouldn't let us do it. Ooh, describe the impact to you in the business by having, I mean, I could keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. And all of a sudden those questions create the story. Again, I didn't sell one thing, but it takes practice.
Absolutely. And I want to jump into some of, I mean, this is part of your sales coaching, obviously, and these are some of the skill sets that you teach on, but you could tell me a little bit more about what the coaching process looks like. And also if you could dig into, it seems like you focus a lot on mindset rather than just the specific tactic. And it seems like you have these formulas, but can you just explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I think definitely mindset, which is why the belief sign's behind me. I think how you start the day, you have to believe in what you do matters. You have to believe in yourself. If you don't, you're already going to get beat because the person who does believe in what they do matters, you're going to hear it in their voice. You're going to hear it in their body language, how they show up. I was lucky enough to do about a year of consulting for a company called Limitless Minds, which is a short little guy called Russell Wilson. You might have heard of him. They started a consulting company called Limitless Minds. His brother, Harry, great dude, Harrison Wilson, and DJ Eitzen. I met some fantastic people there, Colin Henderson, Hannah Pryor, and such. But I learned a lot about the mind, and I learned a lot about the thoughts we have a day and how thoughts become things. And I learned a lot about science says we have, well, I think I'm guessing you're like, not guessing, but I don't have the stat in front of me. I want to say it's like 80 to 90,000 thoughts a day on average.
So crazy.
We as humans. And of those thoughts, 75 to 85% are negative. So when I speak on stages or work with sales teams, I'm like, so think about that. Tell me why that might impact you. And they'll be like, I don't know. Like, well, if I tell myself, there's no way I'm going to get in that account. There's no way. Or there's no one hiring. We're screwed. Oh my God, all this stuff going on in the world. We're screwed. Which I don't have control over that. What I have control over is how I show up. I have control how I compete. I have control over how I respond to things. I have control over so much more than we think we have control over. And I used to joke when I was at Kforce, I said, until the governor of Washington holds a press conference and says that every company in Washington is going to go on a hiring freeze, every industry, every company, that's the day I'll freak out. But until that happens, it's my job to go find them. Those are the types of mindsets I try to instill in people. But coaching programs, I always, at minimum, I work with people is 3 months just because you're forcing and changing habits. It starts with a coaching assessment document that's proprietary. I created that really kind of level sets me on where someone's at, what are their values, how they're motivated, are they coachable, what kind of words do they use, sorts of things. And then the first month we would talk weekly for an hour, and then months two and three, we talk every other week. First couple sessions, it takes time to get through the assessment where I'm really learning. They're learning about me. I'm learning about them. And then I always say sessions 3 through 8, I'm looking to really tie our time to specific revenue or things we can measure so that they'll be like, there's no way I would have ever asked that. Or, oh my God, we got that meeting because you helped me write that email. Or I would have never thought to do that. And I always remind people I coach, like, I'm going to help you do this, but guess how much commission I make when you close the deal? Zero. But I get paid in a currency called karma, which I believe wholeheartedly is, I mean, that's why I think every client I've worked with so far, Dave, has been referral, every single one.
It's the best kind. It means you're doing good work. And I want to touch on two parts of that. So one, I want to go into coaching and hear stories from that. But first, on the subconscious side of things, the 80 to 90,000 thoughts, there's a book, I think it's actually called Subconscious, but the amount of thoughts that we have and then the inability to actually control what thoughts we have is such a mind-blowing concept to me. And the fact that's just like, they're happening. You just control how you react to them. And then I think it is the mindset. I just couldn't agree with you more on the importance of trying to figure out how you react and also over time trying to figure out how you keep the right mindset in place so that you are filtering in the right direction.
I find stories help people learn that better. You know, it's kind of like, I'm very sarcastic, which I think sometimes humor gets people to learn quickly too. But I always say, like, imagine you're on a flight and you're about to go through some turbulence. And then sometimes people get nervous. I get nervous through turbulence. I hate it. And imagine the pilot comes on and goes, you guys, keep your composure, and goes straight Will Ferrell. And can't anybody freaking out? I would start freaking out, but they're calm. Flight attendants are calm.
Always calm.
you know, if we freak out, well, our clients are going to feel it. Our recruiting team's going to feel it. Our ops team's going to feel it. Our back office team's going to feel it. All things we have control over. But instead, we love being the hero or the victim of our own story and then telling ourselves these false statements that aren't true, but we're going to keep saying to ourselves and try to make ourselves believe them.
Yeah, that's definitely easy to get into some of those loops, especially when things get hard. And I think in the staffing industry in the last few years, personally had some moments. I've seen some people have some moments. And I know that there's been challenging times where it's hard. You got to make sure that you're writing your own story, but that's good insights on that front. Speaking of stories, I would love to hear some coaching success stories from you. Any of your favorite wins that you've had or anything that you've heard from clients that you've worked with over the years?
Humbly, I have a lot of success, which is rewarding, very rewarding. I think a couple that come to mind. One, a staffing client hired me to coach their top performer. And, you know, when I was running a desk, the number of consultants I had on was 300, 306. This person I was coaching had 100 on, and they thought they were freaking more popular than Oprah and Michael Jordan combined. And the CEO was telling me that, man, this guy's got a huge ego. So I found a couple ways to get connected to him. And I didn't want to like say, yes, let's hire me as a coach. I said, I'd like to set up a discovery call with this person first, just to get to know him, and not going to tell him that why we're talking. But all I said was, hey, your leadership team thought it might be helpful if we spent some time together, but I want that to be your idea, not mine. So I want to use today as a way to ask questions, and I'll learn about you. You learn about me. And so I found out that he had a certain situation with his family that my family and I were going through. And so I'll save that part for the story just for confidentiality in case the person knows who it is. And long story short, we had now immediate connection. And I think because we really connected, he kind of forgot that I spent time in the staffing industry. And so he said, well, how long are you there for? I said, oh, a few years. He's like, well, how long? I go, I don't know, a couple. How many? I go, 20. He's like, whoa. I go, did you have a good success? I go, well, I think success is measured by everybody differently. I mean, I okay, run. What did you do? I just kept wouldn't answer his questions. And all of a sudden he goes, well, how are you measured? I go, we were measured by revenue, GP, and contractors on billing. He's like, well, how many did you have on billing? I said, I had a few. How many? I go, I had 306. And his look in his face, like he went white. I go, sounds like you're close to that, maybe a couple hundred away. I'd love to share some best practices. Sounds like you guys might be looking to hire a coach. If I can help you, I'd love to share. But if you feel like you got everything figured out, that's fine too. And immediately he wanted to work with me. Again, I wanted to make it his idea. Fast forward to like 4 or 5 months later, the CEO's like, I don't know what you said to him, what you did, but he's like a freaking different dude. So it's like stories like that. It's super rewarding because you can impact somebody, but it's not me telling somebody. It's because I think that's what coaching is about, asking really good questions and being okay with silence and letting people come to their own rescue so that they control the outcome. I think another success story that actually, well, I coach the CEO, but one thing that I love to do, David, is I teach this too. It's called a boomerang mindset. And I'm constantly trying to find ways to connect others, but I don't keep score. And I don't ask for permission to make connections. I just assume that, hey, if we're on LinkedIn together, that you wanted to connect with me, but we're friends.
Yep.
And if I think a friend should meet another friend, I'm going to do it because I believe what I do matters. And I introduced one of my clients to another client. So one client in the staffing software space hired me to speak. One staffing executive hired me to coach her. She was a diversity, woman-owned supplier, really, really good culture, really good team. Her story is amazing. Well, I reached out to this software supplier and I said, hey, if you're looking for really good company, if some of your end clients have diversity spend, or are you looking for more diverse programs? I go, I'd love to make this introduction. I think she's like, oh my God, timing's perfect. I actually would love that. Well, fast forward story. I get a phone call from the CEO of this staffing company, almost in tears one day. She goes, you just changed my life. You just changed my team's life because they got added to this like massive vendor and they're going to now crush it.
That's amazing.
I get paid zero. She was kind enough to send me a gift card to a restaurant locally, but I didn't expect it. But that's what's fun, is seeing, because I feel like I've had my time on stage. I've had my time as a quarterback in college and the number one producer at K-Force. It's now my time, I feel like, to send the elevator back down. And it's such a rewarding feeling seeing others have success. And maybe that's why you and I are together. It's like people keep, whether referrals happen, the connections happen, but those are just a couple of stories that come to mind that hopefully this kind of highlight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you clearly find joy in what you're doing, which you can see. For those of you listening, you can't see it, but I can tell that you enjoy it. And I was referred to you from Chris Doozy. I think it was about a year ago. He was like, if you haven't read this book, you need to read this book. And I went and bought the book immediately. And I haven't gotten through it yet, which is that I need to do that. But he was like, this is what you need to figure out right now is the concept behind this book. And stop working about the deal and worry about the relationship. And it sounds like you've got that dialed in. And we're connected through a referral as well. So
yeah. How about shout out to Chris Doozy? He's going to be a dad.
I know. It's coming soon. He's going to be a dad. You got to have him on your podcast now.
I told him. Doozy, if you're listening, get ready, baby. You're going to be a guest on the show.
How long ago did you start your podcast?
January 2020.
Okay.
And I have 293 episodes. And today on April 3rd, any baseball fans out there, the famous Mike Matheny from the St. Louis Cardinals and Kansas City Royals, he has a new book out called The Dad Coach. And so he came on to talk about that and life's a dad. And this is where it's fun. Like, I don't have a script for my podcast. I just let curiosity drive it. But he also played for the Brewers, Milwaukee Brewers. And so I said, you got any good Bob Uecker stories? He's like, oh, Uecker's the funniest man I've ever met. If anybody loves the movie Major League like I do, Bob Uecker is a freaking beauty. Rest in peace, Bob Uecker, by the way. But he goes, Casey, I was with Bob Uecker on Lake Michigan on 9/11. We were fishing when 9/11 happened. Hey, I mean, that's why I love podcasts, is having those stories organically come out.
That is amazing. And you had some new guests that are coming out. It sounds like you're getting tied into the professional sports arena with your podcast at the moment.
I've been lucky. I've had the Seattle Mariners play-by-play, the Seattle Kraken play-by-play announcer. I've had Yogi Roth from the Big Ten Pac-12 channel. But I've also had stay-at-home dads. So that's what's kind of fun about it. I've had the big names. I've also had names you've never even heard of. But what we all have in common is that we're dads. And I'm teaching dads to become more humble, more vulnerable, more curious, just like I'm teaching leaders. Sales teams do the same thing, because I think, when those skills are present, you're going to have a better home, you're going to have a better office, better culture, better huddle.
I think even just teaching dads how to talk to their kids and actually get their kids to talk, valuable. That's a valuable skill set to have.
I got a story there.
Yeah, let's go.
So we go out to this island on the coast, on the East Coast, called Cuttyhunk. It's off the coast of Boston. We made the crazy decision to buy a house there and a long time ago, which is still amazing. But yet, did we really do that? So my buddy's daughter, she was like 14. She was kind of going through a tough time and wasn't talking enough. And this is where I really was getting to be addicted with TED-based questions. I said, let me try this TED stuff on her. He's like, dude, it's not going to work. I go, well, let me try. So we were taking her to guitar practice. Now, I suck at guitar. I can play like 5 chords. But for the average person, I'm probably decent. For the person that knows music, like, oh, this guy sucks. So instead of just, I was like, hey, towards the name, I said, tell me what's your favorite chord to play. D. So not really biting. I go, tell me, do you ever find it hard to go like D, E, G? She's like, how do you know? I go, well, I self-taught. I mean, if you have tips, man, I'd love to hear what you're thinking. Started to bite a little bit. Tell me what some things I can do to practice better at that. Or tell me what your favorite site is to go learn these songs. All of a sudden, you could hear it in her voice. She starts opening up, because I found something in common or connection that she wanted to talk about. We get out of the car and my buddy's like, what the hell? I go, it's magic, dude. If you ask the right question, it's just like a janitor or a custodian. It unlocks the door. If you try to force the key into the wrong hole, it's not going to open up. It's funny. Fast forward that story. Then like 2 summers ago, we were together. So I've known her for over 10 years. She had the guitar. We had a bunch of people on the deck. It might've been a few soda pops out there. And I go, hey, let's go play. And she's like, no, I'm not playing in front of everybody. I go, you are way better at guitar than I am. And you have a way better voice than I have. I go, how many people play out there? She's like, I don't know. I go, take a guess. She's like, I don't know. I go, one, me. So I'm the only one that'll know if you mess up. They won't. Let's go play. I'll play the first one.
Yep.
And then you, and she's like, oh, I go, come on, let's do it. She's like, all right, one. And everyone like, we went there, like, hey guys, we're going to play a little bit. Anybody want to listen? And everyone got excited. Like, yeah. And so I play the first one and I'm like, okay, she promised to play next. I'm going to suck on the first one. Just trying to self-deprecate through humility, through vulnerability. Yep. And next thing you know, dude, she played for damn near 2 hours, the whole deck full. And then the next day, my buddy's like, I'm going to start calling you the Ted Lasso of Cuttyhunk. I don't know how the hell you just did that. So that's what's fun, is like finding human connection, helping people. And I'm working on these skills every day, just like that I teach. But when you find it and you see it work, it's really, really fun place to live, a fun way to live your life.
Yeah, it's a really fun story. And it is it's a hard skill to grasp. I'm always trying to figure out how to improve the questions that I ask. And I think having a framework seems like it's super helpful as well. I also just connected, you've got the Believe sign behind you, and I'm thinking about the TED process now, and it's just all the Ted Lasso connections all there now.
So. Yep. Well, one way to know, well, we'll put you on the spot. So if I had to give you two words, if you knew you asked good questions, tell me what two words would come to mind if your client, if you made them think. Tell me what two questions you'd want to hear from them.
What two questions would I want to hear from the client?
If you think you were asking good questions.
I haven't heard that before. And people say, that's a good question.
I'm like, bingo.
That's what you just said. Yeah. People go, oh, that's a good question, because it gets them to think, and they go into their brain. They're like, haven't thought about that process that way. You're about to change behavior or belief inside of me. So
bingo.
Yeah.
Well, again, I look for that every meeting I go on. That's how I measure success for me.
That's great.
If you hear someone say great question, this is where I see people mess up. They just go, they don't say, well, great. Well, tell me why. Why was it a good question?
I've never even thought about that. I'm usually like, all right, got a good question there. Score.
Make them think more.
Yeah, that's great. Go deeper. And then you learn how you can replicate it, because you understand what the thought process was there. That's really smart.
And when you get that question, now you have a story to share with future clients. So it might be like, hey, Mr. Mrs. Klein, I was meeting with someone similar to you in a similar industry. And would it be helpful if I shared some of the questions he thought were great questions that really impacted him and his team? No, I'd rather not hear those. I'd rather just...
I'd rather
hear some really transactional, shitty questions.
I'm great at those. Sorry, no, I just thought... I do want to jump into transition, which I think is kind of relevant right now. But as we're talking about the sales process and the questions that you asked, sales techniques, you talked about how you use the MEDIC approach. Could you just explain a little bit about why you use that and why you think it's effective?
Yeah, again, I learned the power of MEDIC, M-E-D-D-I-C-C. Everybody spelling it home. It's not just MEDIC like the medic, but it's an acronym. Google it. I learned it from one of our vendors, partners, and I fell in love with it because it took the guesswork out of. So if you have a team of salespeople or you, your leader, and someone says, hey, when do you think that deal is going to close? I don't know, maybe a couple weeks. And someone says, I think it's going to close tomorrow. And the one person says, I don't think it's going to close at all. Well, the reason why no one knows is because they're using their gut feel, and there's no way to measure gut feel. But MEDIC is a sales process. I mean, other companies have different ones, but MEDIC, I like it, because it stands for metrics, economic buyer, decision criteria, decision process, identify pain, champion, and competition. It gives you a framework to figure out where are your gaps in the deal. Because as a seller or sales leader, I want my reps saving time. I want them winning time. And that's the number one thing. The second thing I want them doing is winning relationships, winning people, creating memorable experiences that they're like, wow, that person was great. She was fantastic. Man, his follow-up was good. I've never seen somebody ask that type of question. I've never seen someone go out of their way to do A, B, or C for me. So if I'm winning my time, if I'm winning relationships, the next thing that organically is going to happen in my experience is, and you're going to win revenue. That's how you win deals. I'm spending, so MEDIC helps me spend time so I don't convince myself that the client has an issue, or they convince themselves they have a problem. It gives me a framework to ask questions, to really go deep, to make sure that, again, I'm not guessing, because I don't want to guess. And I actually had a situation recently where a larger company hired me to coach some of their leaders. And the person said, who I talked to 4 years ago, wanted to work with me again. And they said, hey, I think we're ready to work with you. And I go, I don't believe you. Like, what? I go, you told me that 4 years ago. Tell me what's changed. He's like, he's taking a look back, almost like stunned. I go, cool. What I just did to you, I'm going to teach your leaders, because we want to win time. Now, I believe you, but I want to prove to you how I'm going to do it. It went from me working from three to working with five people. And now they just extended me to work with a very large group of folks. So again, I'm not making this stuff up. And what gives me the most excitement and passion, David, now is sharing this with people who are a lot younger than me. And I tell them, I wish I learned MEDIC at 41. I learned TED at 41. I wish I would have learned it at 23. And yeah, I had a good run at K-Force, but I think I would have even had a better run if I had these tools back then.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the frameworks just help it scale, right? Like, it helps it scale and helps give the common language between people, and predictability part of it. I think for all of us in sales, and especially with the market the way it is. I mean, every conversation I'm having with staffing agency owners, even today, people are like, well, you know, there's a bunch of false starts. We think things are moving, then they're not moving. But I know sales predictability is something that everybody is trying to figure out. sounds like that was a key element for helping to forecast that.
100%.
I know you had also talked about the importance of the follow-up and how the meeting recaps has been a game changer for you. Could you dig a little into that?
I actually give a real life example in the book on page 82, 83.
Yep.
If people do want to check it out, but it's, yeah, because most sellers, they don't follow up. Most sellers don't document their CRM. And so what I do, I teach, is I help people with the framework of having a call to action, but the meeting recap essentially just telling the customer, I'm going to send you a recap what I heard, and I'm going to prove to you that I listened. And then I want to make sure that I articulate what are the next steps for both you and me to move our relationship forward, whether it's next steps of a meeting, could be the deal, could be me getting introduced to his peer or her peer. It could be a number of things. But I love the word uncommon. You know, Tony Dungy wrote a book called Uncommon. I think uncommon people do uncommon things and achieve uncommon things. So the meeting recap, I did not realize is uncommon, but I'm learning it is very uncommon. So again, free coaching for everybody. Listen, watch what happens when you start sending meeting recaps to your clients. A, you're going to spend, you know, stop wasting time. And the client is going to be very, very thankful that you actually care about them, that you understand their business, and you're taking time to learn versus just calling to quote check in, which is code for wasting their time.
The check-in emails are the most overlooked for sure. And it sounds like not only are you doing the focusing on coaching for how to do the follow-ups, how to do them right, to even get to a spot where you are doing a meeting recap in a meaningful way, you have to do the discovery correct. So you have to make sure you're asking questions there. Explain a little bit about how you would approach a discovery and what makes it important.
The biggest and most impactful discovery question I love asking is describe what would be an ideal outcome for you.
Yep.
So it helps me focus on what they want to talk about. I'm trying to understand specific things about their business, specific things. I'm trying to take them to a time maybe when I was in staffing of when something did not go well. And then I'm trying to almost find that pain and let them sit in it for a while. Because if they can sit in that pain or that discomfort, they're going to be more likely to want to make a change. And if sometimes a client would say, well, I just wanted to meet with you. I go, are you sure? Because most people don't meet just to meet. I'd be willing to bet something's not right because you seem like a busy person. Now, challenging somebody takes belief to do that. And again, you saw my tone change, right? So most sellers don't think about that. So it's like how you ask the question. Every word you say matters. When I think about discovery, I don't ask two questions in one. What I mean by that is, so Mr. Client, so how's business? How's the team? What have you guys been working on? And you know, what are you up to? Well, I just asked four right there. And most likely the client's going to answer the last one. I'm going to forget the other three that I just asked, which might be decent questions. But now that I'm not listening, I'm hearing, which is what chapter three is about. Now I go right back into this and I become transactional just like every other poor salesperson. So I think that discovery for me, it's a first half, second half. It's a takeoff and landing. It's like front nine, back nine. It's like I like to talk about them as much as I can, even when they try to make me talk about myself so that I understand their business. Do they have a pain or problem? Do they have discomfort or not? Which is what the I in medic's about to identify pain.
It definitely feels like, I mean, the experience with any sales call in the beginning process is the buyer typically is coming in with like, I want to see a demo. I just want to see it without even explaining any of it. And they're trying to get to that as fast as possible. And I'm talking about from a software side.
Yeah.
But I feel like even on my experience, I was a buyer of staffing services and have been multiple times at different ways for hiring engineers. And I probably wasn't the best buyer because I was like, I just want to like, what's the rate and what can you do? and then I've had somebody who sat me down and said, look, doesn't matter. Like if you don't want to talk about it, it doesn't matter. The rate's not the important part. Do you want to understand what we can do and what are you actually trying to solve to see if we can solve the problem? So it's kind of getting people to slow down, focus on that, getting them to kind of stop people in their fast-paced approach to it. Makes sense.
Well, and I think, I mean, through discovery, let's say, for example, that you were that type and let's say that you didn't want to change as a buyer.
Yeah.
If I was coaching somebody, I said, is that the client you want to work with? Maybe that's not who you want to work with. I talk about deals where I walked away. And I think sometimes, again, when you don't have a sales process, you end up, like I have one client now that they have a bunch of MSAs. I'm like, who cares? What if they don't use your services anymore? But that might be something to figure out before we just rely on the MSA, right? They're like, oh my God, it was so basic. It was right in front of us. But sometimes an external person sees it, but the internal people don't because you're clouded by all the noise of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know? So again, I just think, kind of back to what we talked about earlier, like win time, everybody, by slowing down. And I don't know, I could talk about stuff for years.
Well, I agree with you. And I think that our industry needs more of it because I feel like, I mean, the world might need more of it right now with the way that everybody's kind of accelerating to try to do more, to automate more, to be less human, less personalized in a lot of areas. And then they're like, well, it's not working. It's like, well, you're not actually getting to the connection and to the present moment in a lot of those moments, which is part of the challenge that we face today.
I don't know about you, Dave, but I can tell when I get these automated bot-driven messages that yep. I use one of my favorite buttons, delete. But the people that actually take time to still slow down, and the old school stuff still works for me. If they show, hey, Casey, I just listened to your podcast with blah, 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 blah. Man, it reminded me of my experience with my dad. Great job. Except I had one person, this gives me job security, David, the guy goes, Casey, I just listened to your podcast, Winning the Relationship. I go, bro, I don't have a podcast called Winning the Relationship and we will not be meeting. Good luck. Even sometimes, I've had people show up like 6-7 minutes late to a meeting and they wanted to meet me and then they don't say anything.
Oh, they don't even apologize for it. They're just like, just is.
So I have a choice. So there's great leaders are kind and nice. Kind means I'm going to give you direct feedback. You're not going to like it, but I'm going to be kind about it and do it with grace and genuine tone. But well, this meeting's over and we're not going to meet because hey, you obviously don't respect my time. You didn't even say you're sorry, but I'm going to give you feedback on, and hopefully that since I wasn't a buying client, but imagine I was a vice president of a company and you wanted to meet with me for 3 years and I finally got the meeting. You got the meeting and you just show up late and you're not prepared. I go, all that for what? So it's like, there's just a lot of people that are relying way too much on AI and ChatGPT and saves time, but it also doesn't help things I'm passionate about, which is still the emotional intelligence. And you can ChatGPT all the world, but if you don't know how to apply it in real life and have a conversation, you're screwed.
Completely agree. And I think that's why your skill set in business coaching is, I imagine, in pretty strong demand at the moment.
So I hope.
Well, it sounds like it's moving along the right path. What are some of the, you just brought up the ChatGPT and we've talked a little bit about kind of the state of the world. What are some changes that you've seen happen in the last few years and kind of the progression of sales? Where do you see it going in the next few years in terms of the approach that people are supposed to take?
You know, I think one thing that I see that I like helping clients on that I think some aren't slowing down to do is like slowing down to really make sure is what you think you do, is it what your clients think you do? So practicing voice the customer, going through voice the customer, you know, like, and I have stories for days on when I was at Kforce where I remember I told clients for multiple times, we do this, we can provide this skill set, we can provide that. And then they forget and they go to a competitor. I'm like, I told you, but obviously I didn't tell it the right way because I didn't articulate it the right way, or I didn't maybe send the recap to follow it up. So I think like one thing I'm seeing sales teams do that are having success is like slowing down to make sure their message is tight. That what they think they do, the problems they solve, and how they do it differently or better, would your client say the same thing? I mean, some sales teams, I love asking them, like, if someone came down the hall and said, ABC company, let's say that was where you worked.
Yeah.
And you said, Mr. Manager, if someone came down and said, hey, Casey from ABC company, if you had to describe what he does or how his company, what they do for us, tell me what you would say. And you'd be surprised what people say. Like, and what the gift is, either can pretend that they're going to say it perfectly, or if they don't, you can do something about it. And you take the chance away from. But I definitely am seeing people go back to the basics. I mean, there's so many automated tools and ChatGPT and this message and that and software and all these things. And I think they're great. And I think there's a lot of great tools out there. However, what I still don't think will ever be replaced is this. How I make you feel. How I make people think. Like, I'm not like, God, that one ChatGPT response, wow, he was good. That made me feel so special. Right. Yeah. But if they said, how did he remember my son had a golf tournament this weekend? How did he remember my daughter had a basketball game? How did she remember that it was my wife and I anniversary? Like, that's a feeling that boom into my subconscious that I'll always remember now by people. So again, I think sales teams that are doing that are advancing a little bit more than others because. And some might argue with me that, oh, it's old school. Well, the old school still works in my mind. I'm not saying pound the phone and send faxes out so much, but when you ask the right question, it unlocks the right door. and changes. And that's how relationships move forward, in my opinion.
I could not agree more. And I do think that the approach, what I would always talk with our team about is like it's not a shotgun, it's a sniper. And we got to shift that mindset. And just because you have the tools to send emails to everybody, there were periods where that was effective, at least getting the conversation started. But I think more than ever, the noise has gotten so loud that figuring out how to truly connect and have something meaningful, it's what's working. And that you talk about going back to the basics. We've even heard stories recently about print advertising working again, or like direct mailers being effective because people aren't doing it in B2B. And so it's like things like that, where it's like when channels get overcrowded, going back to what the fundamentals are can be pretty impactful.
Even like a handwritten thank you note.
Yeah.
I mean, it's silly and outdated. It still is unique.
Yeah.
And someone sent me, I made an intro to a recruiter for the staffing industry. I was impressed by her. I introduced her to another one of my clients. They've now placed like 3 people. She sent me a handwritten note and I was like, cause I wouldn't give her my address. Cause she's like, and then she found I was getting mad. She goes, I want to send you something. I'm like, boomerang mindset. I'm not keeping score. It's like, cut the shit. Give me your address. So she sent me a nice like little gift. So I need to follow up with her, but it stood out. Handwritten note. I could read her writing. It was meaningful. She mentioned my son. She mentioned my favorite hockey team. Little things.
Absolutely. As we wrap this up, I want to jump into our speed round of questions. Might be able to guess this one, but I'm also curious to know about what book or books have you gifted the most and why? I assume your book is part of that. So I want to know why for that. But I also would like to talk about a secondary book. Anybody that's an author,
you got to say you can't answer your own question, egomaniac. So I'm not gonna I am a big, 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 big fan of Patrick Lencioni's work. One of my favorite books is Getting Naked. I would encourage people when you search for that one, don't use your corporate directory just in case you get in trouble. But it's about humility and vulnerability. He's a great business fable. He also wrote a great book called Ideal Team Player, which is a great thing for leaders to look for. He talks about being hungry, humble, and smart. I think his work, I think Malcolm Gladwell, I'm a big Malcolm Gladwell fan. Unfortunately, one of my favorite sports authors just passed away, John Feinstein, who I was lucky enough to interview before he passed away. He's written some fantastic, so if you're not looking for like some non-business books, like great sports writer. But those would be 3 authors I think of that I probably share the most.
Awesome. That's great advice. And what advice do you wish you were given before you entered the staffing industry?
I wish someone said, hey, learn as much as you can about what we do. But more importantly, I want you to practice asking questions each and every day. And I want you to listen for someone to say great question in every meeting.
I love that metric. I've never heard anybody talk about that metric. I think that's a great concept. And if it's sales rep, this might be the same answer. You might have the same answer to this question. Sales rep could change only one habit. What would you recommend?
I would say talk less, listen more.
Awesome. Any closing comments for the audience?
Well, let me self-plug the book. So as the author of The Win the Relationship, Not the Deal, I read it a little over 10 times, not because I'm an egomaniac, everybody, but through the editing process or through when I recorded the Audible or when I coach people, I'll go refresh myself parts of it. And I learn from myself, everybody, which means I'm flawed just like you. And these 6 things I wrote about, which is bring energy to the room, treat people the way you want to be treated, set expectations, be a great listener, always use your CRM and document, check your ego, practice, and have patience for people. Let relationships organically develop, but be persistent, but have patience. Like those still work and it take practice. And so I would just encourage people that if you're looking for a tool that will help you a long time, because I've heard people that I've read that said, man, I ran out of school and it's helped me. I've had someone who's north of 40 years old that's told me, how did I forget to do this? Which is why I wrote it. I wrote it for myself selfishly, but I also wrote it for people that here's how you build relationships. And if you forgot how, here's a great tool to go do it.
When did you start writing it?
I wrote it, took me 4 months. I wrote it in April or May of 2019.
Okay.
4 months. And I wrote for every day from 9 to 11:30.
Oh my gosh. And so you just went back and looked at like, how did I get to where I am? What was the core elements of it? How did I have the success I've had?
I actually did a word map. So this is great advice. Like I did like a word map exercise, look at wireframe. So I just wrote down words and then I put like clouds around them, like kind of like a wireframe on e-commerce website. And I just said, okay, when I was, winning people, when I'm having success, in quotes, what did I do? I was curious. I was humble. I documented. And I wrote all these words, and I kind of what words matched together. Then I highlighted those. There was six different colors. That was the six different chapters. And I started writing.
That's incredible. I've already got the book in Audible. So my next run, I'm picking it up and I'm reading it, and highly recommend others do. Highly recommended to me from Chris, and I trust him and trust you, and excited to see what it's all about.
I narrate it too. It's my voice. So it's almost like Bedtime by Casey. Bedtime stories.
Awesome. Casey, I really enjoyed having you on today. I appreciate all of the advice. We'll drop a link to the book in our show notes, and also link to your coaching. And it's really nice talking with you today.
This is a blast, man. Keep up. I love what you're doing. And I'm grateful to that Chris introduced us. And it was a really fun conversation. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.